You've said this phrase, and so have I. As a matter of fact, everyone you know has said this one time or another. The phrase, I don't have time. Now, creatives like us are especially feeling like we're pressed for time every day when it comes to responsibilities and things that we want to do and we feel God has called us to do, but our time is never seeming to be on our side. But today's episode is going to show you how you can finally get mastery of your time management and do so in a godly way, the way that God would have taught us to manage our schedules. Now, our guest today is going to show you how to do just that. His name is Jordan Rayner. He's one of the major influences on God and Gigs. He's been on the show before, and he has a new book out that's going to teach us how to redeem our time, how to use our time wisely, and not only just in a theological way. He's going to show us some practical ways that you can put this to practice right away and gain control of your time. Now, if that interests you, you've got to keep listening. Give me a moment to welcome our new listeners, and let's get right into this incredibly effective and important discussion.
Artists, musicians, and creatives of all kinds, looking for help balancing your passion to create with your everyday life? Not sure if your faith can coexist with your profession? Welcome to a place where real artists discuss real life. You're listening to the God and Gig Show. Visit godandgigs.com for show notes, links, and more information.
Thank you so much for making this podcast a part of your creative day. I appreciate you joining us, especially if you're a new listener. Thanks for making this podcast your choice for today. You are in the right place as a creative, musician, freelancer, artist who wants to build a better creative life from the inside out by applying timeless spiritual principles to the temporary creative problems that you might be facing. And you picked a great episode to join us with today because we have Jordan Rayner as our guest. Now, if you wonder why I say Jordan Rayner is one of my favorites, I can't pick favorites in this podcast, but he's definitely at the top of whatever list that is. It's because he's one of the influencers that really helped us get God and Gigs formed and created really what it is today, because I've been following Jordan for a long time. Now, if you don't know who Jordan is, you can go check him out at jordanrayner.com, but he is a leading Christian content entrepreneur and author of best-selling books Called to Create and Master of One. He has been working for years to help connect the gospel to our daily work as Christians, and he has reached millions of people through devotionals on YouVersion and through his books and his podcast, Call to Mastery. So you're going to hear from someone who knows our world as a creative. And today he's going to talk about his new book, Redeeming Your Time, 7 Biblical Principles for Being Purposeful, Present, and Wildly Productive. Now in this book, I'm going to let him talk about it, but he takes an in-depth look at how Jesus made daily decisions. And then he breaks these principles into 32 practical ways that we can apply time management principles that will help us improve our lives. This is a radically new way of looking at time management. It's going to benefit you right away. I'm applying some of these practices to my life. It's already transformed my productivity. It's transformed the way I look at life from day to day and decisions. I guarantee you it's going to do the same for you. Let's get right into this incredibly informative and insightful discussion. Don't miss a moment of it. Get a notepad or a pen or something to take notes. And you're going to be applying these principles, and especially after you check out the book that we're going to be talking about at the end of the interview. Here's our talk and discussion with author and entrepreneur Jordan Rayner. Jordan Rayner, thank you for coming back to the God and Geek Show. How are you?
Alan, I will come back every time you invite me. I am thrilled to be here, man.
It is such an honor. And again, like we were just saying right before we did the last show, we're not speaking this, but we believe in speaking whatever things are good, whatever things are perfect, whatever things are lovely. But it just so happens that the last time we interviewed was around February of 2020. And we're just saying that everything past this interview is going to be much better than what happened last time.
Much better. It was weeks before everything went down. It was not great timing.
But you know what? It actually is. Well, see, that's a great segue right there. Not great timing. Yeah. But actually for me, and this is kind of like, again, we just mentioned about talking selfishly about what's going on in my world, that was actually perfect timing for me, because when that happened, number one, as we all know, suddenly time stood still. And it was like, we all had way more time to do things that we never thought we would have to do, thought we'd have to deal with. And I found myself very, very transparently, Jordan, that moment was when I had the most guests, the most people who had, you know what? Go ahead. Let's go ahead and do the interview. Let's go ahead and have this person that was a Grammy winner who I thought I could never talk to was sitting at home. And so it actually did kind of make us realize, hey, number one, as we're going to talk about, time is fleeting. Time is something that it could either become our greatest ally or our worst enemy, depending on what we do with it. So I think I'll start with this. And number one, for those who don't know you, go ahead and give them the 30-second elevator speech, because I know you very well, but maybe they don't. And I'd like to make sure that they connect with you from the get-go. So just tell them a little bit about what you do and why you're doing what you're doing.
Yeah. Hey guys, my name is Jordan Rayner. Spent the first 10 years of my career as a tech entrepreneur, started and sold a couple of different companies. Today, I really view myself as a content entrepreneur. I spend 100% of my professional time creating books, podcasts, and other content that helps Christians connect the gospel to the work that they do, primarily outside the four walls of the church. And so this new book that we're talking about today, Redeeming Your Time, is really just one expression of that mission, right? Helping us all connect the gospel to our perennial struggles with time management.
Okay, so I had to start with this. I am privileged, the full disclosure, I'm privileged to be a part of the team that's at least watching this. And here's my confession. I mentioned before we got on the air, Jordan, I have a confession. And this is, you know, I won't do the cross. We're not stepping into the booth or anything like that. But here's the confession. Mr. Rayner, I just finished reading your book on time management.
Yes.
Because I didn't have time to read your book.
I love the honesty.
I mean,
you finished it. Look at you.
I finished it the day before this interview. I finally said. So the idea, the irony, is it irony? I don't know what to call it. But the fact that I should have been reading this because I needed it in order to do the things that we're talking about right now. And so let's talk about the practicality of this book, the practicality of time, which affects all of us. I mean, I could go quote after quote after quote, whether from the Bible or Benjamin Franklin, Dost Thou Love Life? Because, you know, then that's the time, this stuff life is made up, all these things about time. And it really struck me, though, that as you were discussing this, even in your launch team, that you had these different ideas for books, but this is the one that came out. And I was wondering, why hasn't this been discussed more? I feel like almost it's like any great idea is like a duh idea. Like, of course we should be studying how Jesus and how the gospel regards time. Why do you think we haven't talked about this until you brought this up?
Man, I don't know. But yeah, I think a lot of our listeners sitting there being like, man, I've read 10 time management books. The world doesn't need another time management book, do we? And I would argue we do for a few reasons, right? Listen, I've read 40-ish books on this topic over the course of my career, and I got three big problems with them. Number one, they're really centered on what I call works-based productivity, right? The idea is that, hey, you're feeling stressed, you're feeling overwhelmed, follow my system, do steps 1, 2, and 3, and then you will find peace. Yeah, here's the deal, guys. As Christ followers, we already have peace. Romans 5:1 says we have peace with God, ultimate peace. So we can take a very different approach in what I call grace-based productivity, which says that because of Christ, I start with peace. So I do time management exercises 1, 2, 3, but I don't do them to get peace. I do them in response to peace. And that's a radically different way to approach a book. The second problem I have with all those other time management books is they fail to account for how the author of time managed his time when he came to earth in the person of Jesus Christ. This is crazy, Alan. Jesus was easily the most productive person who ever walked the earth. And yet I've never read a book that studied how he lived his life. And I think part of this is because, you know, the church, we're so used to reading the gospels for their theology and their ethics. And of course, there's a lot there. But we have to remember the gospels are also biographies of Jesus Christ, right? And no, they don't show him walking around with a to-do list or a smartwatch, but they do show him fighting distractions at work, making space for silence and solitude, and trying to be busy without being hurried, right? And so I wanted to write a book that studied the gospels through that lens. And Redeeming Your Time is the result of that, right? It's these seven
timeless time management principles from the life of Christ, mapped to 32 modern day practices to help us live out those principles today. So problem number one with most time management books, they're centered on workspace productivity. Problem number two, they fail to account for how Jesus spent his time. Last problem, third problem. A lot of time management books are very valuable in and of themselves, but they focus on individual pieces of a much larger puzzle, right? So prior to writing this book, man, I'd be sitting down for coffee with friends and they'd be telling me about their time management problems. And over the course of an hour-long coffee, I would recommend 10 books, 12 books for them to read, which is obviously the last person that person wants to hear, right? And so the thing is, like, each of those books contain a critical piece to the time management puzzle, but I have yet to find a book that contains all the pieces and connects them all together. And I think by looking at these seven principles from the life of Christ, we can see how all the pieces fit together. And that was my audacious goal with this book.
I love it. And the fact that you just talked about the pieces that obviously God, the author of time, I love that phrase, author of time, and the idea that we have the blueprint that yes. Jesus, number one, I love the fact that you even point this out, that for 30 years, we don't hear anything about him. And then in 3.5 years, he manages to set aside everything that we would need for the gospel, everything we would need to for redemption, everything, and made sure that, as you point out many times in the book, he said no to certain things. So I think this is the first one. You point out in one of the chapters about letting your yes be yes and making sure that those yeses are real and those no's. Now that hit me hard because I'm a people pleaser. Okay. Yeah, I am. And this is where my counseling session starts. Cause my wife, and I'm sure your wife too, has many times said, Alan, you're doing too much. You're giving too much to too many people. And of course the guilt sets in because we think that in order to be Christ-like, we have to be all things to all people, but we can't be all things to all people at the same time. So can you address that a little bit about that feeling that as Christians, even especially as creatives, that we're supposed to not say no, we're supposed to be that person and not, you know?
Yeah, sure. I'm happy to. Mark chapter one is the best example of this, right? Mark chapter one, Jesus spends the afternoon healing some people in the synagogue. He goes to Simon Peter's house and he heals Simon Peter's mother-in-law. Then he heals a bunch of people in the town. They go to bed. The next morning, the disciples find Jesus spending quiet time alone, which he did a lot in the Gospels. And they say, hey, Jesus, everybody's looking for you. It's time to heal some more. And Jesus says, no. He says, no, let us go somewhere else that I may preach, because that is why I have come. I think it's Mark 1:35, right? So there are lots of instances in the Gospels where Jesus did say no to requests for his time. But here's the deal. There were other times in which he said yes and was sacrificial with his time. Mark 14 is a really good example of this, right? John the Baptist had been beheaded. Jesus heard the news. And he immediately, it says he got into a boat. He withdrew by boat privately to a solitary place, Matthew 14:13. So understandably, you know, all Jesus wanted to do when he heard this news is be alone, but the crowds wouldn't let him, right? The account goes on. It says the crowds followed Jesus around the shore and were begging him to come in. And that time, Jesus said yes, right? He had compassion on them and healed their sick. So, you know, contrary to worldly wisdom on this two-letter word, no, it's not as simple as, unless it's in line with your priorities, say no. Like that's out of step with Jesus' sacrificial example. So yes, there are times we're called to say no, but there are also times where we are called to be sacrificial. And I think it just requires a lot of prayer, a lot of discernment, and trying to figure out when to say yes, when to say no. In the book, I offer a few different questions that I like to use to help discern when to say yes, when to say no. I'm not sure if you want me to talk through those, but it's not as simple as, you know, unless it's an amazing opportunity to say no.
Yeah, I know. I love that. I would like you to talk about some of those practices, but in light of, can you give me a specific example of a time where you had to use one of those principles of saying no, the way to give a Christ-like faith-filled no to something like, where have you had to use one of those tactics or practices that you talk about in the book?
Yeah, I'm happy to. So I'll give a really practical example. So one of my favorite questions to ask when trying to decide if I'm going to say yes or no to a request for my time is, am I trying to do good or am I trying to make myself look good by saying Ooh. Yes?
Oh, that hurt. That hurt. I don't want you to do this anymore because I just felt
So please stop. Please stop. Please stop. No, no, listen. Hey, look, I'm going to point the finger right at me because I'm guilty of this. I'll give a great example. Last year, I was invited to this really cool event. It was out in Colorado. Everything was paid for. Guest list was really, really small, 50 people, 50 incredibly high caliber people. And yeah, I was like, this sounds like an amazing opportunity, right? This sounds really cool. But I realized like it actually going to this event wasn't aligned with my goals and the work that I think God's called me to do. I was going because I wanted to sit at the cool kids table.
Yeah.
Right? And like, that's a lame reason to say yes to something. And thankfully, I have a very gracious wife who like totally called me out on it. She's like, you're just going because you want to hang out with these people, right? I'm like, yeah. She's like, that's dumb. Stay home and help me with the kids. I'm like, you're right. That's exactly what I should do. So I said no. Thankfully, by Kara's grace, my wife's grace. But that's just one of the questions I love. The other question that's related to this story, I love the question. This is a great opportunity for what? Right? Yeah. Like, a lot of times we say, oh man, this is a once in a lifetime opportunity. Man, this is such a great opportunity. To what end? For what purpose? Like this, saying something is a great opportunity shouldn't be a complete sentence. It's got to be a great opportunity connected to your goals and connected to the things that you believe God's called you to do with this vapor of a life he's called you to steward, right? So those are just two questions I love to ask.
Now that I love the opportunity one. I'm so glad you went to that one because yeah. That's the word that us creatives, those of us in the music field, media, entertainment, that's the golden word, right? This is your opportunity. Like obviously in other fields as well, but especially in us, those who are in this, this is the stage you have to be on. These are the people that you have to meet. And I think it's so important that you mentioned staying prayerful about what has God called you to and the people he's called you to versus what our ego or our mindset or what we believe our vision is going to call us to. So I love that. And yes, that's one of the practices I absolutely am taking to heart. Another practice from the book that I am really, really trying to work on is this idea of unipresence. Now, there's another book that I'm going to throw at you real quick. You know, we're going to be totally nerdy here. I'm trying not to go super nerd in books and or productivity stuff. So anybody that hasn't read these books, forgive me. There's a book I read earlier called The End of Absence.
Huh.
And it is about, the author's talking about this idea of constant connectedness, of the multitasking, of the doing everything. So basically, he just took a year off of social media, put his phone down, just chronicled what happened. And the reason why your unipresence and the omnipresence of God, it hit me so hard, those three things, because I think we are supposed to be always present, and absence is absent. Like the idea of us being able to withdraw and be able to be by ourselves in solitude, as you said, Jesus took solitude, is somehow like it's forgotten, the idea of being disconnected and being able to. So can you talk a little bit about the unipresence and why it's so important that we're able to disconnect and realize we cannot be all everywhere at the same time?
Yeah, it's so, by the way, I love that. What did you say a few minutes ago? Is absent?
Yes.
That's gold. That's really good. I'm going to steal that.
No, absolutely. Now, I stole it from somebody else. I can't remember the author. So you have it.
So here's the deal. We talk a lot in the church about how Jesus was 100% God, which of course he was. We don't talk nearly as much about the fact that he was 100% man, right?
Yeah.
For 33 years, Jesus in human form traded his godly omnipresence for the human, what I call unipresence. I'm not even sure that's a word that you and I share today, Alan, right? You know how I know we can't be in more places at one time? Because Jesus wasn't, right? All through the Gospels, you see him with this remarkable ability to be fully focused on one important thing or person at a time, right? And then with Mary and Martha, that scene where he says, few things are needed, indeed only one, to Mary and Martha. I don't think he was condemning the fact that Martha was busy working in the house preparing a meal. I think he was just saying, you're distracted. You're doing too many things at one time. You're cooking and trying to have conversation with me.
And then he got upset about it. And then she, that's why she kind of got mad. Say, hey, hey, showed up. Yeah, absolutely.
That's exactly right. We believe we have fallen for this lie of multitasking, of being able to be present with multiple things at the same time. It's a lie. And you know how we know it's a lie? Because Jesus displayed the opposite ability, the ability to be fully focused on one thing at a time. So it's critical. And as you pointed out, listen, our mobile devices are enemy number one in this fight for the deep life, right? And the unipresent life. And so we've got to put practices in place that help us descent from the kingdom of noise that's created by the noisiest devices in our pockets.
Yeah. And now that one, again, I'm literally, you know, have my iPad over here to make sure I have this. And we're surrounded by screens. We're surrounded like this. I wanted to get your, again, I'm this is my personal counseling session, you guys, and you're just listening in. just happens to be Jordan Rainer on the other side. I really feel that most of us as creatives, you know, my audience is generally, again, musicians, artists, creatives. Yeah. We feel like if we descend from the kingdom of noise, we lose everything. Like we feel like I'm not going on TikTok. I just refuse. But obviously Instagram, Facebook, I feel like if I'm not there, I love this phrase, by the way, I got for the book. I love that when you talked about crack stat, like that's my thing. Like the crack stats, checking the likes. It's like, if I try to withdraw from that, and you talk about these practices in the book of how to do it, but I just wanted to be real with us.
No, this is good.
Is it possible that those of us who live in this world, social media world, and feel like we have to be there in order to make a living? And I'm not talking about social media managers. I know, understand they do that.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about like just those of us who say, okay, you have to post. Yep. If you don't show up for a week, they're going to forget about you. What would you say to us to make sure that we're still living that kind of unipresent life?
Listen, I would say I'm right there with you, right? Like I don't tell you in the book, you got to delete Instagram from your phone in order to descend from the kingdom of noise. I'm an author. I spend time on Instagram. Now, I only spend it 5 minutes a day because I know how addicting that quicksand of a platform can be. And so I take extreme measures to ensure that I get in for work and I get out before I get enveloped by that quicksand. So one practice I've started using actually after I finished writing the book. I wish I could go back and add it in. With Instagram specifically, the only social media app I have on my phone.
Okay.
I delete it and reinstall it every
single day. Every day?
Every day. And let me tell you what, Alan. It's the biggest pain in the butt in the freaking world. But that's the whole point. That's the point. Wow. Every day at the end of my email block in the afternoon, I install Instagram. I have to manually log into my account. Right? It takes me like a minute to do this. I go in, I check my messages, I post something for the day, and then I delete the app off my phone. Because here's the deal. I had screen time blocks and limits on my phone. I tried everything. It doesn't work. These forces are way too powerful. The attention economy conglomerates are massive and well-funded and powerful, right? So for me, I'm just too weak, Alan. I got to be totally honest with you. The only thing that I found that worked was, getting on there for work, posting something because I do need to be on the platform, and then deleting it as soon as I'm done. Work's done, delete it, and come back and do it again tomorrow.
You know what I love about this? Because what you're really doing, again, we're going to geek out a little bit. Books like Atomic Habits, all these other books talk about setting the environment in which you can actually follow through with your commitment. And so what I feel like what you're saying is same thing with putting your phone away at night. I do that. I put it away 30 minutes trying to stop the screen time, right? Just things like that where you have to tell, you know, is basically like what you also mentioned, Paul saying in his to himself, I beat my body. I put things into submission. I take control of the things that take control of me so that I will not be undisciplined. He uses that phrase. Yes. And so I think it's so important. I love that you get that perfect example for those of us. Again, yes, you have to use your phone. Yes, you have to post. Yes, you have to show up for your people because that's grace, right? We're showing grace to people.
Absolutely.
We're showing up for people in a place that maybe I don't want to be, but Jesus did the same thing. He was inconvenienced, but he didn't stay inconvenienced.
Correct.
And he didn't allow himself to be ruled by it.
I'm not jumping on board the social media is evil train. I don't believe that, right? I think social media adds some value to our lives to our work, but we do not pay nearly enough attention to how addicting and powerful these services are. That's the point I'm trying to make. We have to either completely renounce social media in order to dissent from the kingdom of noise, or attain some level of independence.
I like that.
We have to wean ourselves off of the addictive drug. And to do that, as with any addiction, and let's face it, this is an addiction, right? We gotta be ruthless in doing that.
Yeah, I love that. Yeah, since you said that, I thought about the book you mentioned, The Ruthless Elimination of Hurry, right? Same thing, the ruthless, being able to say, I refuse to be stuck into this particular mode of thinking or this way of the world. Exactly. I love this. So now we're going to geek out a little bit, a little more.
Great.
A little bit.
I love geeking out.
I have always been a scared disciple. I don't know if it's cut, that even makes sense. I've been a scared disciple of getting things done. You are the acolyte.
I'm all in.
I'm 1,000%. I'm still dipping my toe in the Jordan. Like literally, I'm like, I don't want to go in. But I have to tell you again, after reading this, and those of you who are going to pick up the book, you're going to see this. You absolutely explain why these methodologies. Actually, number one, you connected to the gospel beautifully, which I never thought would possibly happen, which, you know, one thing, I don't think it had any, you know, faith-based thing to it, but you connect why these commitment tracking systems and all these things, why they work. And I wanted you to tell me a couple of things for me personally.
Yeah.
I found that my particular usage of, I think it's Todoist or something else.
Yeah.
When I started using some of your tactics, which is things like putting things in the inbox.
Yep.
Making sure that all of the things I say, when my wife says it, writing it down. Why is it so important that you made so many chapters and so many practices about using the tracking, using things like a digital device? Why did that actually, you know, make it where it was a brunt of some of these practices?
Totally. Because I think in our modern environment, it is essential to have something like what you're describing, what I call a commitment tracking system, in order for us to obey Jesus's command that our yes be yes. That's the second principle of the book. Let your yes be yes, your no, no. And Alan, here's the deal. For years, my yes was not yes. My voicemail greeting would say, leave me a voice message and I'll call you right back. You know how many times I did that? Zero, right? We're right there. I would tell my wife, I would commit to my wife. Oh yeah, I will make sure to pick that up on my way home from work today. And I wouldn't, because I hadn't written it down. So there's this term that neuroscientists like to use called open loops, right? The idea is there is something in your brain called an open loop that happens anytime you make any level of commitment to do something. It can be something as big as I want to sign a book deal in the next year, or something as little as my wife needs me to pick up milk on the way home. Your brain makes no distinction between the size of the commitment that you're making to yourself or to others. The problem is most of our brains are bursting with open loops, right? Mm. I bet your listeners are sitting there right now, be like, oh yeah, I forgot I need to do that today. Or I committed to myself that I was going to do that by the end of my 30s, whatever it is, right? The problem is when all of those things are in your brain, it creates a tremendous amount of anxiety and stress. And oh, by the way, it also leads you to drop the ball on things and ensuring that your yes isn't yes. But the solution is actually beautifully simple. You don't have to do all of those things and close all those open loops in order for your brain to forget about them. All you have to do is write them down in a trusted system outside your brain. That could be a paper-based system. It could be a piece of software. I use an app called OmniFocus that serves as my personal commitment tracking system. It doesn't matter what it is. What matters is that you extract the open loops from your brain, have everything in one place so that your yes can be yes. And you know, it's been interesting, Alan. I read Getting Things Done by David Allen 12 years ago, something like that. Changed my life. But I've always had a really hard time recommending that book to people because it's 350 pages. And honestly, I think it could be condensed down to 8, which is what I did in this chapter of the book. Right.
Got it. Yeah. Thank you. Because I was the one when I saw it, I was like, no, thank you. Thank you so much. You literally made it possible for me to actually put these into practice.
Yeah. But here's the deal. I've been walking people through an advanced copy of this book. And the people who are like, this does not sound like the thing for me. They've been doing the work, building their commitment tracking system. And out of all the things in the book, they're like, Jordan, this changed my life. And I can be trusted by the people around me to do what I'm going to say I'm going to do every single time.
I love that you drew that line between the trustworthiness, because that's one of the things that we're supposed to be hallmarks of us as Christians, is that we are faithful, right? Being faithful stewards, being faithful over a few things, that means faithfulness, trustworthiness means that people can count on us. And the thing I was also thought about was, as you said that, was there's so many, you answered my next question, which was, what about the free spirits? What about the people that do suffer with ADHD or things like that? Yeah, and they say, hey, I just can't think this way. You know, that was me for years, that I said, oh, well, I can't possibly be this organized because I am a, you know, a creative and I jump here and my mind, and it's, I'm better when I'm multitasking. That's what I told myself. And so it's so great.
I'm going to tell you a story because I just heard this story last week.
Okay.
It's a woman named Kelsey, who has been a part of this little coaching community I put together to walk people through an advanced copy of the book. Kelsey's in tears with this group as she's sharing this story. First grade, she was pulled out of first grade for severe ADD. So like, Jordan, this has been such a hallmark of my entire life. I've struggled mightily with this. And she says that through my book and other resources in her life, but definitely over the 7 weeks that we walked through this book together, she is the most organized, most focused person she knows because of these tools. And she said, quote, I don't even identify as having ADD.
Oh, wow.
And the group just like, is like weeping. Like, this is amazing. That's the power, not of my wisdom, right? It's the power of us living in line with Jesus's image. Jesus ensured that his yes was yes. We need tools to do the same thing. And you know, listen, I think the book, listen, I'm obviously a structured person. I'm obviously a disciplined person. I'm not a free spirit. But what I found is a lot of readers are telling me there's so much flexibility in the book baked in, so much empathy baked in, that people who are far more free spirited than I are finding ways to adapt these practices and make them work to ensure they're living out these timeless time management principles that we see in the life of Christ.
Yeah, that's true for me. Again, I had a little bit of a head start, thank God, with things like, you know, like 7 Habits and all these other great materials, as you said. Your materials are helping me to solidify and make those things actually actionable where I know they've always been there. I want to jump ahead a little bit to your personal life in terms of how you've applied principles such as the Sabbath that you mentioned in the book, things about how you now say, okay, I've managed to start to get a handle on my commitments. And now you mentioned things like how to get 8 hours of sleep. That's a whole nother topic. We could go 20 minutes on how in the world you do that. But I did want to get to really, I was really, really, the way that you broke down, and those of you who are going to read the book, you'll see it, how you broke down Sabbath, how you broke down how you and your family practically walk out this. I can't remember the chapter. I had it in front of me and I didn't look at it because I'm trying to look at my
digital devices. Sorry, chapter 6. I got you. I got the book memorized by now.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, is that fancy?
So I'm happy to talk about this. So the sixth principle of the book is embracing productive rest.
That's what it was.
And I don't argue, scientists do for me, that taking bi-hourly breaks throughout your day, getting 8 hours of sleep a night, and Sabbathing, is that a word, weekly, is productive counterintuitively, right? And here, let's dive a little bit deeper into Sabbath. Alan, when I grew up, I grew up in the church, by the way. I didn't know a single person that observed the Sabbath in any serious way. And when I did hear about the Sabbath, to be honest with you, and I think a lot of people could share the sentiment, I just viewed Sabbath as this legalistic chore, this day filled with things that you couldn't do, rather than a day filled with joyful things that I could do. And about, I don't know, 5-6 years ago, I was rereading the Gospels. I was reading Mark chapter 2, and I came across Jesus's words to the Pharisees about the Sabbath. And it seemed like Jesus was agreeing with me that we had taken Sabbath and made it this legalistic chore. But Jesus said the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath, right? Sabbath is it's supposed to be
a gift that we joyfully engage with, that we enjoy once a week. And so, yes, Sabbath is about ceasing. It's about stopping productive labor and productive talk. But more than that, I think it's about feasting on the word and the good gifts that God has given us through our work. And Alan, I talked about this in the book. Sabbath has become the most life-giving thing for my family's life. I have a young family, seven-year-old, five-year-old, two-year-old. And dude, we just need a break once a week. Like, our life is just busy and hectic, and we need a break, and we need to cease, and we need to feast. So for us, Sabbath is about not doing dishes and not doing laundry and not talking about things that worry us about the week ahead. But more than that, it's about what we do on Sabbath, right? We eat takeout from our favorite restaurants, right? We order crumble cookies every week. My kids watch a full-length movie and drink coffee once a week. Please don't judge me, right? We feast on the word. We feast with our church family. It's this island of get to in the sea of have to of our weeks. Like, we love it, man. It is, my kids, they have no construct of time, right? So every day they come downstairs, like, Dad, is it Sabbath yet? I'm like, it's Tuesday. Sabbath was 2 days ago. But they're excited. They can't wait for Sabbath to come around once a week.
See, that is such a beautiful picture. And I got to tell you, the picture that brings to me is, again, you mentioned about, you know, dissenting from the kingdom of noise. It's also dissenting from the kingdom of hustle.
Yes.
It's perfect. Like, I know, again, I'm preaching to myself. I'm confessing again. This is the hardest thing for me. Just taking a vacation. Yes. Talk about vacation. Yes. Once a year. You're basically saying that God gave us permission and freedom and God rested on the seventh day, not because he had to, not because he was tired, because he was exhibiting how we could do it. This is how to do it. Like you said, Jesus did it. Jesus respected the Sabbath. We talk about, you know, you just talked about this, how Jesus saw the Sabbath, yet he observed it perfectly. Yes. And clearly, so that means, I'm riffing here. That means he did his work for the kingdom and the gospel in 6 days a week, not seven. So we hustle seven. Yeah. And yet Jesus is like, no, I'm going to do the redeeming work of humanity in only six.
Yeah. And here's the deal, Alan. And maybe this is just a season of life I'm in with young kids, but I don't take very much vacation, very little. Thank you. In the last 2 years,
I hope my wife is listening.
In the last 2 years, I don't know. I think I've taken a total of 2 weeks in the last 2 years, two or three years, like totally off. But here's the deal. I take a vacation one day out of seven. I get 52 vacation days a year. And honestly, my rest on Sabbath is 10 times more restful than taking the kids to Disney World for a
week. Oh, absolutely. Right?
Like,
oh,
my 10 gosh. Times. So it's just, I hope readers see, number one, how productive Sabbath is towards our goals, right?
Okay.
But also how productive it is for our souls, right? Because it's a way of preaching the gospel to ourselves. It's a way of reminding ourselves, we don't have to hustle. We can stop hustling for one day a week, and God still loves us. Mm. We are still his children, and the world keeps spinning without our hustle, right? I need that reminder at least once a week, if not more. I think we all do.
Yeah, I love it. And so that leads me to I don't get credit for this one phrase and this discussion point. I actually brought this one of my friends at church, David Roman. I'm giving you credit because he's such a thinker. And so I told him about your book. I hope he's listening. And he's a thinker like us. He's going to love everything in this book. But he mentioned, I said, hey, we're talking about redeeming the time. We're talking about, you know, that phrase in Ephesians. And he said, you know, I'm thinking about the Old Testament. He said, when I think of redeeming the time, he said, God never did these practices of temples and Sabbath. None of them were based just on the past. They were always based on looking toward the future, the Hebrews, the type and figure and shadow. So I just wanted to ask you, because he got me thinking, is this whole thing about redeeming our time, about time management, productive rest, making sure we descend from the kingdom of noise, eliminating hurry, is it more about the present, about making sure each day is given back to God? Or is it really more about our future, what God is trying to do for us. Because I think we can't do more in the future if we don't manage our present.
It's a beautiful question. I love this question, David and Alan. Listen, so the word that's translated to redeeming, in redeeming your time, it's exagorzo, I think is how you pronounce it. And it connotes this idea of buying up or ransoming something, right? So Paul's saying, you've got this thing that you're losing, right? You got to buy up. So I think the primary context here is the present. That said, obviously the reason why we redeem our time is for eternal future purposes, right?
We don't do it
to store up treasures on earth. We do it to store up eternal treasure, always looking to the future and investing in things that matter. That includes our work here and now, to be crystal clear,
right?
But that's the concept of redeeming the time. Because Paul says the days are evil. He says we need to be redeeming the time because the days are evil. He's saying we're running out of time. He's saying the clock is ticking. We are running out of time to do the work that God has called us to do. Now, God doesn't need us to finish our to-do lists, right? He's going to finish them with or without us. But we are running out of time to be a part of the blessing of co-laboring with the Lord here on earth as we build towards the kingdom.
I love it. And the phrase that popped up to me is Psalms 90 and 12, teach us to number our days so that, I think that's so key that there is a reason, like you said, the reason that we're talking about all these practices is not just, like you said, especially in the last chapter, about not just being that guy that has everything together and we can like point to one. I wanted to make sure I closed off with this in terms of your personal practice. Once again, because I admire you so much, but you do end this discussion with a kind of a warning. It's almost like a kind of a, like a be careful, kind of like wagging finger at the end of the book. So in your own personal experience, what has been the thing that has kept you from becoming someone that is kind of bound to these systems, bound to, you know, the idea that I have to manage every moment of my day perfectly?
Yeah. So this is going to come as a surprise to your listeners who have been with us for the last 40 minutes. I'm a pretty disciplined guy. I love discipline and I make no apologies for that. I think Jesus was incredibly disciplined with his time. The Apostle Paul was crazy disciplined in how he stewarded his time. Discipline is a good thing. The problem is, as with any good thing, we can easily turn discipline into an ultimate thing and thus turn it into an idol. And for me, man, there are two things, two signs that I look for to know that I've crossed over to the dark side of discipline. You know, number one is when I'm unable to extend grace to others who are less disciplined than me, right? Somebody shows up late to a meeting, or a member of my team drops a ball on a project. Sometimes, Alan, I got to be honest, I can sit there quietly. I would never say it out loud, but just seething with this self-righteous anger, even though I've made the exact same mistakes before. And when I fail to extend grace to other people in those situations, that's how I know discipline become an idol. The second way I know it's become an idol is when I'm unable to extend grace to myself, right? Mm. When, you know, a book doesn't do as well as I thought it would, or I don't hit a quarterly goal I have, or I didn't get my coveted 8 hours of sleep. If I can't be at peace with those things, if I can't give grace to myself, something's wrong. And listen, the solution in both of these situations is the gospel, is reminding ourselves that every good thing we've been given is grace, including the gift to be disciplined. And we did nothing to earn that, right? Everything, including the breath in my lungs, is a gift from God. And thus I can have no level of arrogance or pride about those things. It's all a gift. And just remembering that and preaching the gospel to myself on a daily basis keeps me humble and keeps me on the right side of the dark side of discipline. Keeps me on the light side.
Because you're on the, as when you talk about choosing the force, right? The dark side. And I can't remember what the other side was, but anyway, stay on the right one. But I love this so much because again, this is right where we are as people. Like you wrote something that hits home for, there's not a person that is not dealing with time. We mentioned the pandemic. Yeah. We mentioned all these stresses, the news cycle, the social media cycle. These are all things that as Christians and as believers that we can't get away from. We're not supposed to be hidden from, but we should, again, have at least some level of, I love the word you said earlier, independence. We're yeah. independent of it. We do deal with it, but we're not slaves to it. And I really hope that people will, number one, pick up the book, but more importantly, apply the heart of the book to their lives. Because that's really what I heard. I see practices. I see amazing strategies. I see theology, as you mentioned. But more importantly, like even as you just mentioned, you're putting your heart out there that this is something you want in all of your work, that we're able to not just redeem our time, but redeem our lives, redeem all this yes. work that we're doing and make sure we're giving it back to God. So you have any overarching theme that if somebody, even if they don't pick up the book, what would you want to make sure they remember about this entire subject?
I think I come back to the gospel. I mean, that's home base for everything for me, right? Every night I put my kids to bed. They're seven. I got three girls, 7, 5, and 2. And before they go to sleep, I say, "Hey girls, you know, daddy loves me. You know, daddy loves you no matter how many good things you do." They say, "Yeah." I say, "You know, daddy loves you no matter how many bad things you do." They say, "Yeah." I say, "Who else loves you like that?" They say, "Jesus." Or my 5-year-old theological stickler says, "God the Father, God the Son, and God the Holy Spirit." But here's the deal, man. Like, we all need to hear those same words applied to our efforts to be productive. God loves you, listener, regardless of how productive or unproductive you are. May the security and the rest that you find in that love lead you to want to be wildly productive on behalf of his agenda in the world.
Amen. Amen. I am so appreciative that, again, your influence, both through your books, through your life, through the way you've just welcomed me in as a student of productivity, a student of being a master of one. I appreciate you. Once again, Jordan, thank you for sharing with our listeners. Thank you for sharing with the God and Gig Show. All the links are in the show notes, but let's just let you tell them, make sure that they know how to find the book.
Yeah. So real easy to find the book. You can find it on Amazon, wherever books are sold. Here's the deal, though. Alan, when are we releasing this podcast?
Huh? Okay. All right. This is time. Now we're doing time in the future, right? This is. We're going into the future.
Going into
and
the future.
As you're listening, listener, at around October-ish. Exactly. So, yes.
Right, okay, good. Time. I know this works. So, here's the deal. Here's why I asked. If you order the book before October 23rd, go to jordanrainer.com. And there's a form there you can fill out. And you'll be entered to win a trip I'm giving away to the Holy Land. Mm. Or if you're not comfortable traveling internationally over the next 3 years, I'll write you a check for the equivalent cash value of the trip, which is about $5,000. And the whole reason why we're doing this is because the whole book is about walking like Jesus walked. And so we thought, yeah, we've got to go send somebody to walk where Jesus walked to go to the Holy Land. So it's this epic trip. It's 8 days, you and a friend. I'm paying for everything. So yeah, get the book on Amazon before October 23rd and then go to jordanrainer.com, fill out the form, and you'll be entered to win.
Wonderful. And there is no time like the present to do that. See what there I did there?
Go. Look at that.
Yes. My wife is grimacing somewhere. I just feel it. I feel it. She's rolling her eyes. She's like, she was waiting all day for that. For that woman. But as a dad and a fellow dads, you know, dad jokes and those moments, we live for those. And so those moments, we live for them.
And you knocked that one out of the park.
Thank you. Jordan, this is so amazing. I love it every time. Hopefully this won't be the last time. I know there's so much more coming out of your camp and your company. But for now, I'm going to make sure that we, again, redeem the time. Go check it out. Go buy it. Definitely enter the contest. And we're going to have all that information on the show notes. But until next time I get to share some time with you, sir, thank you so much for being a part of our show.
Thank you, Alan.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I told you that this was a radically new way to look at how you manage your time. And if you even caught one of those practices, let alone all 32 that are in the book, you are going to find something that's going to change the way that you do your daily life, the way that you approach time with your family, time in your career, time pursuing the passions that God has put on the inside of you, because you'll have more time and focus to do so. And I was not lying when I said I got a chance to read that advanced copy and immediately taking on a couple of those practices, including the Instagram one. Trust me when I say having Instagram off your phone makes a huge difference in the way that you spend your time. So I would not be able to express enough how much I believe getting this book is going to help your daily life. Go ahead and go to jordanrayner.com and check out how to purchase it. And of course, as you're listening, you're probably going to find it on all book platforms, but just go to jordanrayner.com to find out where to get it and follow everything else Jordan is putting out, his podcast, The Call to Mastery with Jordan Rayner, and everything else. We cannot highly recommend enough everything that Jordan is doing, because as you heard, he is truly working in the kingdom, but right at the space where faith and work intersect. And that's exactly where we are here at God and Gigs. So I believe I don't have to say anything else. Go check out the book. All the links that you need are in the notes that you want to click on or tap on, but just get right away to, oh yeah, and enter the contest. If you're hearing this before October 23rd, you heard what he said. You can be on the way to Israel in the next 3 years. So you have a plenty of time to choose to go if you win. But the most important part is that you got to choose the time now to go ahead and register. And that means you got to go out and check out the book. This has been an incredible interview. I'm so appreciative of you listening all the way through. Make sure to keep following us at godandgigs.com as well for more insightful and incredible interviews like this one. And make sure to check out everything we have, including our membership, where we have a community that helps connect people like you, highly motivated creatives, God and Gigs 360. You can learn more about that and everything else we're offering at godandgigs.com. But until next time, please continue to become the creative that you are created to be. Thank you so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for joining us here at the God and Gigs Show. Please leave us a review on iTunes, like our Facebook page, or visit godandgigs.com and tell us what you thought of this show. We'll be back soon. In the meantime, go create something amazing.